Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Good morning and welcome back to Circles of Change. It's always a pleasure to go global. And in this case, we can do it by actually calling Ohio with a colleague who is indeed a citizen of the world, but we're grateful that she's also in higher education here in the United States. Thridi Imregard, how are you this morning, Thridi?
Hi, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
You bet. I'll kind of beam you back to Tucson from the standpoint of your and my having met during the Tucson Festival of Books.
That's right. I'm happy to be back.
Exactly. Happy to be back without
over the radio waves.
Exactly. Without over 105 degree temperature, you can enjoy the Midwestern temps today. I know, it isn't indeed. Oh, dear. Let me introduce Thridi Purse before we get going on our rolling conversation. She is an Indian-American writer who grew up in Bombay, India, and Thridi immigrated to the United States when she was 21 to pursue a Master of Fine Art from Ohio State, followed by a Ph.D. in English from Kent State. She's author of 5 novels and the memoir First Darling of the Morning, her own story. A former journalist for the Washington Post and the Cleveland Plain Dealer, among other newspapers, she now writes regularly for the Boston Globe's book pages. Thridi is also professor of English at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. She's a recipient of the Nieman Fellowship to Harvard University and was a finalist for the Penn Beyond Margins Award, which is a great acclaim. And the book we're going to focus on today in her list, and the most recent one, is The World We Found. It's her newest novel and also been recognized by the Oprah Magazine, the Boston Globe, and the Book Sense Pick. The story is of 4 women who are inseparable during college, during actually a tumultuous time in the Indian history, and reunited decades later by a tragedy. So I guess might I start with the first question, and 3D is this a story that's been traveling with you for quite some time before you actually put it down in writing?
You know, no, actually. The story came about in a very, I would say, sudden kind of a way, in that I was visiting family in India in, I believe it was 2009 or thereabouts, and I ran into an old college friend of mine who I had totally lost touch with and had not actually seen in over 25 years. Mm-hmm. And we sort of ended up spending the afternoon together, something that I suppose most people would do if they hadn't seen a friend in a long time. And in the course of that conversation, we talked about, you know, the fact that she had been politically active when we were in college. And I asked her if her involvement in politics had continued, and she said no. And she sort of gave me the reasons for her disillusionment with politics. And when I left her home that evening, I just felt like this was a topic, you know, of sort of being young ones, being idealistic, and how time can sometimes sort of dilute that activism and that idealism. I just wanted to explore that on paper. So the book came about rather suddenly, in that I felt like I was watching the plot unfold in front of me when I left her home that evening. So it wasn't actually one of those books that had haunted me for a long time. This one, you know, came to me as a gift, and I tackled it soon after.
And I'm certain if we had time to take call-ins, there'd be countless people on the phone saying, can I take a secret sauce to make that happen for me? Because that is not typically the story of most of you, particularly, I think, in the folks I've interviewed that write novels, is that they can say, well, I wrote this one book and then I had to put it down because another one popped up in my conscience. And then I came back and I found out the protagonists in the story were taking me in a different direction than I thought. It's sort of this,
right,
you know, living live in my own story, but they're not cooperating with me.
Right. Well, I mean, believe me, been there, done that too. So, you know, each book sort of has its own pace and its own rhythm. And, you know, sometimes it truly does feel like it plopped into your lap from the heavens. And other times a book just makes you sweat it out a little bit harder.
I'd love that. Which, of course, I'm certain is something that you tell your students in higher education that you're supposed to sweat. This isn't supposed to be easy.
Well, it's not supposed to be easy, but I do believe it's supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
Because after all, it is a voluntary activity, and, you know, if it's not fun, why spend half your life doing this hard thing?
This hard thing. That's right. Trudy, I mentioned in the introduction that actually your career, with your writing background really started from more a journalistic perspective. Was that just more a set of circumstances, or did you always envision you wanted to be a reporter on the beat?
I'll answer that in a minute, but I should just start with a minor correction. In your intro, you said I was a journalist with the Washington Post and the Plain Dealer, and I just want to, for the record, clarify that even though I have written for both publications, I was never sort of on that payroll, so
okay,
to speak.
Please.
So
please.
Just for the sake of historic truth. You
yes.
know? But as for your question of whether I've always wanted to do journalism, the answer was at least from the age of 7 on up. I think I was about 7 years old. I couldn't quite pronounce the word journalist. I remember asking an aunt of mine to teach me how to say it correctly, but I knew I was so attracted to this whole idea of newspapers and, you know, essentially a new product being born every single day. I was just fascinated with that. And, you know, I knew at an age even younger than 7 that I somehow wanted to have a life that involved words, that involved language. And I wasn't quite sure how to go about it. I mean, there was nothing in my life that would have allowed me at that point to say I wanted to be a novelist or I wanted to be a poet. I mean, those things felt so esoteric and so out of reach. And frankly, I kind of knew in that way that children somehow seem to know things that perhaps they are too young to know even, that that if I had voiced those kinds of sentiments out loud, I would have sort of been laughed out of town, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
So that wasn't a real option. But so journalism for many years felt like splitting the difference, you know, between what I actually secretly wanted to do and what felt socially acceptable. But, yeah, I think I've wanted to be a reporter for a very long time.
Yeah, that's right. And I think you're right. As children, and thank goodness we don't know that we can't do things, right, or that we still have to play on multiple plateaus. Because
right.
if you look at so many fields and professions, they change so much over the course of our formative years that if we knew we had to just go into slot X, you know, how sad would that be?
I mean, if somebody could have predicted that after, you know, close to 20 years of being a reporter, the whole profession would just sort of implode, you know, I would have just not believed them, I think, you know.
Well, it's imploded, maybe the other way to say it, though, it's been open accessed to so many others who can contribute, whether that be, you know, the shift from print media over to blogging and the Internet.
Well, that's very true. I mean, that's very true, and that's frankly a much more kind of generous and hopeful and non-fearful way of looking at what's happened within the industry in the last 10, 15 years.
And wouldn't you say the same, too, for those of you that have written books? Because you've got, a memoir and 5 novels now to your credit, and, you know, then you have the onset of self-publishing versus those supported by a company that gives you the contract up front.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I think the same technology that has clearly changed the model of journalism and perhaps even its definition has certainly come into play in publishing, too. I always joke with my friends that I have now been in 2 professions that, you know, sometimes feel like they are imploding and, as you say, in other ways feel like they're just gathering steam and they're going in an entirely different direction.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, who's to say in the next 5 years how your blended experience of journalism as well as writing, and let's, oh, by the way, add in this phenomenal contribution through teaching the next up-and-coming generation of writers isn't going to put you in a whole new space, and who knows what that space might be.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's touch back.
I just hope there is a space for me in the next 5 years.
My guess is, Trudy, for someone like you, there's probably in about 10 spaces, and you're going to have to make a choice and be careful not to do either or, right? So how can I do the and so I can still flourish as a professional?
Yeah. Right.
In fact, that's where I wanted to, of course, go, is that, you know, you grew up in Bombay, India, and, of course, several of your novels capitalize on that really lived-on-the-ground background that you have. Of course, this most current novel, The World We Found, bridges right. the United States and India. Do you think that was always going to be just naturally part of the novels that you pulled upon? Was that personal experience?
You know, it's interesting. I've just finished another novel. It's actually with my editor even as we speak. And even though that novel is set entirely in the United States, it does have a character, a main character, who's Indian. But the one that I'm literally just thinking about getting going on, you know, the one that's followed, the one that I've just finished, is going to be set entirely in the U.S., and I don't know if there will be a single Indian character in it. And this really was, I mean, talk about a gift from the gods. I mean, this is a plot that that literally, I'm embarrassed to admit this out loud perhaps, but it came to me in the shower. I mean, I just saw this book and as if it was already written, so I feel compelled to tackle it and do something with it. But this will probably be my first novel that may end up having no Indian characters and be not set in an Indian locale at all. Because many of my books, you know, I have a book that's set entirely in the U.S., mm-hmm. but it has Indian characters. I have another book that's set mostly in India, but it has an American couple at the heart of it. So I guess you're right in that I seem to be straddling two worlds. And I have no idea if that will always be the case or if something will change in the years to come.
Or, you know, someone else who might say, because, of course, I have the pleasure of you know, sponsoring my own business and so on, is I kind of hope to envision clients at places I want to travel to, right? Like where right. I could simultaneously meet up with my family or other professionals from past in life. And so lo and behold, oh, now I get to travel to Chicago a lot, and I happen to have family there as right. tied with a client. So part of it for you, of course, would be the lifelong connection you always have to your native country, to India.
I suppose, yes.
So the World We Found, for those I'd like to plant the seeds, of course, to encourage people to go pick up a copy of this wonderful piece, which I read nonstop. Of course, I was a bit under the gun since I was going to moderate the panel you were on, so I wanted to have read it nonstop, but it wasn't one that I had to fight at all. And again, for those of you who may have just tuned in, we're speaking with Thriti Umrugard, and her latest book is called The World We Found. You can learn about all of her novels on her site at www.umrigar.com. And tell us a little bit about the story of the four friends that met in college.
Yeah. So the novel actually unfolds in contemporary time, but we do go back enough into the past to realize that these are four women who met as college students in Bombay of the late 1970s and, you know, quickly became very, very good friends. And I think part of sort of the glue that held them together was the fact that they were all young political activists. They were all student activists. And so they were more than just friends. I mean, they were kind of comrades, and they believed in sort of progressive causes, etc. But when the novel opens, we find that one of the four women has moved to the United States and settled there soon after finishing college. And she has been diagnosed with a fatal illness. And I think she surprises even herself when she realizes that in the short time that she has left to live, what she wants to do more than anything else, perhaps, is to be reunited with the other three women.
Friends, yeah.
And her health does not permit her to travel to India. So the plot then sort of changes to the conflicts and the struggles that at least one out of those other three women who are still living in India have in terms of coming to visit her. And part of the complication of the plot is because one of those three women is married to a man who, you know, he happens to be Muslim. At one point, he was very much sort of an equal partner in their marriage and in their political activism. But as the years have gone on, he has become more and more religious and more conservative in his views. And he puts his foot down and prohibits her from visiting the three friends. And the complications of the plot sort of arise from that basic crisis.
And for our listeners who may not know of the history of India, of course, in the late 1970s, this was a very tumultuous time in your country's background, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think in some ways they've all been.
Yeah, okay.
But it was also a very exciting time. You know, it was a time of sort of intellectualism, progressive politics, really the dream of sort of finally transcending all the religious strife that has really polarized the country for so long, and really creating sort of a new democratic, secular India, or at least amongst the small, you know, undoubtedly privileged minority that these four women and their two respective husbands belong to. There was certainly that sense of, you know, it was possible to shake things up. It was possible to change the world.
So
one of the things I wanted to do in the book was just capture kind of the promise and the headiness of those times.
Yes. So one would say then that, of course, your book is a novel, but one would also know, given your own background and certainly having been a journalist, and I think you can't have been a journalist, you're always a journalist, right? You
right.
just happen to wear a different cloak on a different day, at least how your
Absolutely.
Signature comes across the book, is that the reaction to this book then, have there been those that have come forward and said, in its own way, it's a voice for a new political activism or a commentary of not just history, but of a future?
You know, I don't know. I can't off the top of my head recall any reviews or any such statements.
Mm-hmm.
But needless to say, as a writer, I mean, if, you know, I'm not even interested in sort of providing answers for readers. I'm really just genuinely interested in raising questions. And one of the questions that sort of fascinated me in the process of writing the book was the simple question of, you know, does it matter?
Yeah.
At the very end, I mean, does it matter? I mean, what you do in your 20s, you know, the fact that these young women, you know, who are very charming and very charismatic and frankly could have just had a good time in college, you know, chose to take those precious years of their youth and devote it to something bigger than, larger than themselves. And then perhaps in each in their own individual way, to some degree or the other, moved away from that path.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Does that dilute the importance of that time, you know? And I think each one of these six characters has to answer that question in his or her own way.
Well, I can absolutely resonate with this storyline, certainly not as the tumult aside. I just came back from a trip where I had the opportunity to touch back in and see one of my college roommates who I hadn't seen in 25
uh-huh.
years.
Wow.
And
yeah.
you're absolutely right. In the issues we talked about, we both have daughters, and
yeah.
We met through the experience of a social sorority. And social sororities are very different today than they were 25 years ago.
Absolutely.
And you know,
everything is different.
It
now.
Is.
Yeah.
Everything is.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
and so,
yeah.
in some regard, you ruminate on the glories of the past, and then you say, well, wait a minute, we got to let go of that. And, oh, by the way, know that our daughters are going to lead different lives than us.
Absolutely. And some of that will be for the better, and some
mm-hmm.
of it might not, you know? So
So what kind of feedback have you gotten from your book then so far? I mean, based on it's been several months since you and I spoke
oh,
back
sure.
in March. So what's the reaction been? And
you know, it's been I have to say it's been uniformly positive, which of course feels good. I mean, it's better than the alternative. it's interesting. I mean, I don't profess to know why this is the case, but most of the reviews and the reviewers do not really engage so much with the political themes of the book as much as they do with the story of friendship and the literary
yes.
themes,
right.
you know?
Right.
And that's fine with me up to a certain point, but I have to say that my intention in writing the book, I mean, it is very much a story about friendship and, you know, how friendship needs to be cultivated, that it sort of withers on the vine if you don't tend to it over the years. So there is that aspect of the book, but to me the heart of the book is really these kinds of political questions that I think the novel does raise.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the other thing is that you're also been in this business now of writing books for quite some time. And yeah. as we often hear about authors, that their book gets rediscovered, shall we say, or reintroduced at X point another time. And
yes.
you might catch a different wave of social consciousness or social unconsciousness that right. would allow that message to come back when it circles again.
Right. And you know, frankly, a lot of it depends on what country the reviews are coming out of also. I mean, you know, the stereotype, rightly or wrongly, about the U.S. always is that the quote-unquote political novel is an inferior creature.
Mm-hmm.
We don't give the same credit and value to books that deal with politics that, say, Western European societies do. And that's just, I mean, that's just a fact.
So with that in mind, then, when you sat down and write your novels, and those that don't fall in your lap, shall we say, and they're already written, lucky you to just, you know, be the pen or the typewriter to transpose it, but the ones you really earnestly dig in, are you writing them then for a global audience, do you feel? To see what other trapdoors could I uncork there and know that, hey, it may not be something that is yet right time for the U.S.?
I'm really not writing for any particular audience, because writing a book is hard enough. And for me anyways, I would spook myself if I was conscious or aware of even a reader at the time of writing it. You know, mm-hmm. for the most part, I'm just writing for the act of writing. I'm writing to answer some questions for myself that I'm intrigued by. You know, the whole question of reception and who your audience is really something that follows. I mean, that's, to me, that's more of a marketing question. It's not so much a literary or an editorial question. So if anything, I fight the urge or the temptation to let my mind wander when I'm in the act of writing as to how the book might be received or what the reception might be or how people in different places might react to it differently. I try very consciously to block all that out.
In which case, I would also commend you to say that's why you are in the truest form a writer, as opposed to some of us that say, well, I have to write a book because it's going to substantiate me as a consultant or as a doctor or whatever, that yours is truly the pursuit of the writing itself.
Well, you know, that's how it started. I mean, frankly, you know, the fact that I have these books published has certainly helped me in you know, my academic career, because, as you know, academics need to publish, etc. And yet it always sort of, it gives me pause every mm-hmm. time somebody draws a connection between my publishing record and my academic success, mm-hmm. shall we say, because to me, I was writing from the time I was 5 years old.
You know, that's right. This is not a new thing.
Yeah, you know, years before I thought of becoming even a journalist, let alone an academic. So I do it because I have to do it, and it makes me happy to do it. And this is what I say. You know, I can't tell you the number of times I've spoken at before groups such as the one where we met, you know, the Tucson Book Festival, where somebody will come up and say, you know, I have this great novel inside me and I just don't have the time and I just don't know how to go about doing it. And I mean this in the kindest of ways. I say, then don't. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, only write if it makes you happy, if it gives you joy. I'm sure you can have a perfectly happy and successful life without ever picking up a pen to write creatively. I mean, and if that book in you is really so strong and so overpowering, then you will do it. It will make you, it will force you to sit and write it. You know?
And in fact, you know, with that, we had said, of course, the title of your book is The World We Found, and
right.
I might even say the sidebar would be The Book That Found Me, to your point.
Oh, in this case, yes, very much so.
The
I mean, very
me.
Much so. It really was just, it came to me fully baked. I mean, that's the only way I can say it.
But now you have to admit, though, it must be a real kick when your new students for your next semester class walks in and someone has a copy of the book and says, Professor, would you sign this for me?
It doesn't happen as often as you would think, yes, of course. And, you know, frankly, as long as they're reading anybody or anything, I'm delighted just by that. But, of course, it's nice when a student actually reads your work.
Isn't that wonderful? Well, again, Thridi Umrigar, thank you so much for joining us. Our guest today, Thridi, it's www.umrigar.com. Of course, we had the pleasure of getting to know one another through the Tucson Festival of Books. Her latest book is The World We Found. and we hope we are going to get copies and see you for the next novel that is about to come out and the other one that's in the oven, cooking away, ready
Thank
to
you.
Be digested and enjoyed. So have a wonderful balance of the weekend back in the Midwest. We'll see you back here in the Southwest at some point.
Thank you, Zara, and just survive the Arizona summer.
Oh, we love it.
Can.
We've got the sunshine indeed. Take care.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
You bet.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.